Missouri's only 24/7 all sports radio, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, up and at 'em. Let's go. Come on, Thursday. It is 6:05. What a show we have for you today. And I'm not just saying that to say that. It is July 31st. It is not hockey season. The Stampeders play tomorrow. And yet, we are rammed today. Before 7 o'clock, we'll get to the news of the day. We will head to Italy, where we check in with Jeff Glass, a netminder in the KHL, as we continue our What the Heck's Going On in Russia series. Closer look at the KHL in the NHL's offseason. They're already underway. Training camp in Italy. Sounds nice. The Instigator is the name of the best sports book I've read in the last 2 years. We'll talk with the author today, Jonathan Gatehouse. He's a writer from McLean's Magazine, and the book is a biography on Gary Bettman. You heard of Gary Bettman? Josh, you know Gary Bettman?
Yeah, I've heard of him.
What do you think about him?
I don't know him personally, but as a commissioner, I don't like his lockouts, but I think he's grown the game a little bit.
So we're going to find out someone that knows more about Gary Bettman. Exactly how he's perceived in Canada, what the league was like before he got there, what his lasting impacts on the game are, and what's he like as a human? Did he like hockey growing up? So Jonathan Gatehouse wrote The Instigator. We'll chat with him at the top of the clock, 7 o'clock. That's an hour away. We have a top secret guest at 7:30. Jay, we're not even allowed to say who it is.
No,
we can't. But safe to say, one of the most famous athletes from our country. That could go anywhere.
Probably the most famous.
Well, I don't know. Maybe you're being too specific. Maybe you're being a jerk and you're blowing this whole thing up, you dummy. Maybe not. Maybe he's not that popular. Maybe no one's ever heard of him.
No one's
secret guest at 7:30. Josh may find himself in the hallway for that one. 8 o'clock, Elliot Friedman, as we are a day away from PK Subban and the Montreal Canadiens allegedly sitting down for an arbitration case. I still don't think it happens. And yesterday we talked a little about TJ Brody possibly getting paid, looking at what Jake Gardner got as a contract. And Andy Green just signed an even bigger contract. And I don't know that TJ Brody wouldn't be using those numbers now as a comparable. He's got a new 5-year pack worth $25 million that kicks in not this year, but next year. Andy Green. I don't know enough about this guy. I'm like, who? Yeah, I've heard of him. $25 million? This cap is high, my friends. There are guys getting paid. And if Andy Green's worth five, why in the world are the Montreal Canadiens going into arbitration telling an arbitrator PK Subban's worth 5.25? Know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous. They can't get to arbitration or they'll get hosed. So we'll talk with Elliot Friedman at 8 o'clock about all things NHL, including some big numbers going to defensemen. We are a week away, less than a week away. Early next week, the Rogers Cup tennis tournaments will start in Montreal and Toronto. Get ready for Tennis Mania Canada. Milos Raonic and Eugenie Bouchard on home soil. The ladies in Montreal, the men in Toronto. Carolyn Cameron, of course, the co-host of the Sportsnet Morning Highlight Show, the Connected in the Morning with James Cebulski. We'll check in with the lovely Caroline at 8:20. We still have to play Stump the Hump with more Flames trivia before the end of the show. And you were at practice yesterday chatting with the Stampeders Lions.
Yeah. Well, Lions.
Lions.
Yeah.
You went into the visitors practice. And the leading rusher in the CFL at this juncture of the season happens to be the man you spoke with.
Yeah, Andrew Harris. Good conversation with him about the season. Lots of good stuff, actually. Really kind of opened up about what's going on with the Lions, why they're so Jekyll and Hyde, and actually talked to him a little bit about the concussions of them. Absolute candid comments on the John Cornish situation as well.
Yeah, Cornish and Walter.
They'll surprise you of what Andrew Harris thinks about the CFL protecting players.
A fellow Canadian running back.
Yeah.
So some strong stuff there. We'll hear from him as well, probably before we get to Elliot at 8:40, but it depends how long our special guest wants to hang around at 7:30. Because frankly, he could say the whole show if he wants. Or she. Maybe it's a she. Well, no. Top secret. We have to get off the air. I'm going to say his name or her name. We got to get out of here. We'll be back in a moment.
Stop saying his.
Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
The boys are talking sports on your drive into work. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
It is 6:13 on your Thursday morning. Pinder and Humphrey's in for the vacationing Dean Boomer Mulberg. No word on if he has suffered any poolside cardiac arrest. It is warm in Vegas. It's also warm in Calgary, though. Got myself out to Speargrass yesterday, played around with the old man. Old man's a good golfer, and Speargrass is in gorgeous condition. Of course, our sponsors for TF Tuesday. Got to say hi to Jamie Driscoll. The big Oilers honk. And Josh, you're not a regular around here in the mornings. Usually an afternoon guy. I owe Mr. Driscoll some money.
I think I was here for this bet.
Yeah, because we made a bet in the Stanley Cup final. Yeah. And then, like, was it the series or was it just game four? Yeah. Controversy. And I finally said I'm going to be the bigger man and I'm just going to pay him what I owe him. Even though I thought we were talking about the series, he thought it was a single game. So I'm in there yesterday. I'm like, all right, Driscoll, I got your loot. I haven't been out here for a while. And he says, you know what? Better than taking your money right now, I want to go double or nothing with the Tour Championship coming up, the Players' Championship coming up next week. The final of the four majors. And so he wants Tiger. I get Rory. And then we have one other wild card each. So if we've learned anything in the last 3 minutes, apparently I'm gambling on golf now. This is a problem. You know you're a bit of a degenerate when you're gambling on golf, right?
The gentleman's game.
But how can he take Tiger? I mean, Rory against Tiger. That's easy money, no?
Tiger's due.
Oh, he's been due for 6 years at the majors. At least it seems that long. How about those Blue Jays? My goodness. Okay, Blue Jays, let's play ball. They win again last night, fifth in a row. They sweep the Red Sox. When's the last time the Red Sox looked this bad, by the way? Complete sell mode. Today is Major League Baseball's trade deadline, the non-waiver variety. You can still get deals done beyond today, but you have to place players on waivers, and other teams can make claims, and then you can take them off the waivers if the wrong team gets the player. It's a little more confusing than all the other trade deadlines in sport, which is unfortunate. But point being, this is an interesting day in the Major League calendar. The Blue Jays are off to Houston to open a four-game set, but there's some big names that might be changing places today. Last night was supposed to be John Lester starting for the Sox. They scratched him, which pretty much tells you they're shopping him. It sounded like Baltimore was close to getting him yesterday. That seems to be kiboshed now. And maybe it's the Cardinals. Maybe it's the Dodgers. Someone's going to get John Lester, which is a very
Cardinals
nice
already
ad.
Made a big trade. They picked up Justin Masterton from Cleveland.
Yeah, Masterton's a good pitcher. He hasn't had a great year, but he's always pitched the Jays tough. And Cleveland's out of it, so that makes sense for them. They get a first-rounder back from St. Louis, an outfielder. Other guys that probably get traded today, or at least will be talked about, Alex Rios, the former Jay. He's in Texas, of course. And anyone on that Philadelphia Phillies roster could get swapped out. Cole Hamels, A.J. Burnett, Cliff Lee, amongst others. Phillies have some bullets. And I don't mean in the sense that players that are helping them win, but players that can get them some value back in a trade. So we'll watch that today. It is a 2 o'clock Mountain trade deadline. And I wonder what the Jays do. I wouldn't be upset if they went and got another arm, but it sounds as if they're not going to go lion hunting, so to speak. They're not going to go out there and go give up some of their best prospects, Sanchez, Stroman, Dan Norris, Dalton Pompey, a Canadian outfielder that's in single A. They're not going to go give away the future for a short-term rental. It's going to have to work longer term, or it's going to have to be a very minor part that's cheap. Maybe a bullpen arm. Maybe another starter that's mid-rotation that you don't know a ton about necessarily, but could give them some depth. Drew Hutchison, by the way, starts tonight against the Astros, who are coming off a big victory over the Athletics, which is somewhat impressive. Astros
8-1.
Not really that impressive, though. They're 20 games under 500. Blue Jays on a heck of a roll. 9 of 10 now, or 8 of 9? I mean, they're cruising. I think it was 10 of 12 yesterday. Yeah, 10 of 12. We're going to stick with that. I'm actually going to have to look this up now. But they are rolling. They've won five in a row. They're still 2.5 back of Baltimore, who've been cruising. Jays are 10-3 since the All-Star break, and they were 2-8 going into the All-Star break. So this is a nice little turnaround, and they haven't yet seen the return of Encarnacion,
no.
Lind, or Lurie. It sounds like Lind's the closest. They may get him back in Houston, but most likely for next week's huge series with Baltimore and Toronto starting Tuesday.
Does it kind of worry you in a way that those guys aren't back in the lineup? Because, I mean, we've seen it here in Calgary before, where back when Jerome Iginla got hurt, the Flames really picked up their socks and they were doing really good, and then Jerome came back in the lineup and then the team
everyone
struggled
relaxes a
bit.
Yeah.
And you kind of wonder, does that almost worry you a little that might happen with, you know, Encarnacion, Lind, Lurie get back in? Now all these guys that have been really pulling up their socks and contributing relax or not even in the lineup, and maybe things don't go the way you would expect them to?
That's probably overstating it. The way I would look at it is, if I asked you who you want hitting cleanup behind Jose Bautista, would you want Deonner Navarro or Edwin Encarnacion?
Oh, definitely,
right?
Edwin.
Totally. And I don't think Anthony Ghost tries harder at the plate because a guy's injured. I don't think he relaxes because they've got a different third baseman that night, because Brett Laurie's there, not Juan Francisco.
Yeah, it's just everything's going so well right now, you'd hate to disrupt it, but in a way you can't keep those guys out of the lineup.
And the one thing that could happen, which might be the bit of the letdown, is that when you get Lind back, when you get Edwin back, when you get Lurie back, these guys will have been away from baseball for a bit, and it does take some timing. Mm-hmm. They might not come out of the gates hot with the bats, but you know you're going to be fine on defense with Lurie. Edwin can play first better than anyone else. They have to play first base, and I just think he gives Bautista that much more protection hitting behind him in the lineup. You can't pitch around Jose if Edwin's there. Mm-hmm. As for Adam Lind, he's crushed righties his whole career. That's not going to stop now. So it'll be interesting. We'll follow the Jays. We don't have a Jays guest today because we're so rammed. It is a busy show. The Instigator is a book on Gary Bettman. We talk with the author at 7 o'clock. His name is Jonathan Gatehouse. A top secret guest, 7:30, with huge news. We'll have that one, obviously, at 7:30. That's the time that the 7:30 guest shows up at 7:30. Elliot Friedman at 8 o'clock as we try to make sense of what's going on with the Canadiens arbitration, P.K. Subban, and Andy Green just got paid. Also, a little Rogers Cup preview with Carolyn Cameron, that before 9 o'clock. Busy show. We'll break. We come back with your news of the day as we take a quick lap around the world of sports on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Interact right now. Text 960-960 to sound off. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It's 6:24 on your Thursday morning. A big event getting underway in about 40 minutes in our city as the ATB Financial Classic goes from Sirocco as the PGA Tour Canada stop in our fair city. The only one of the seasonal circuit. Riley Fleming we had on Monday morning. 20-year-old from Airdrie. We'll tee off at 7:35. Best of luck to all the Canadians in the field. And everyone else, I hope you hit it in the woods. Wow, that's not very nice. Shouldn't say that. I guess good luck to everyone, and may the best man win. Hopefully it's Riley. Is that better?
From Canada.
From Airdrie. He's 20, man. That's crazy. He's on the Pro Tour. I mean, it's not Justin Spieth crazy, but it's close. So we'll keep an eye on that. You've been rolling your eyes at me. I want a leaderboard update when we get to...
Well, it's a good thing you're not the boss, so...
8:40.
You'll get what you get.
All right. You can bike to work tomorrow, bud. No more pickups for you.
Hitchhiking.
Do you like how I just hold that over your head every day? I'm like, well, if you want to ride, it's going to be an early bike ride tomorrow.
I want to see that update written before I come pick you up.
That's right. So the first tee off time is at 7:15 down at Sirocco. And I tell you what, if you're a golf fan in the city, go down and check it out. Immensely reasonable, free parking.
Nice course, too.
And Rising Stars. This is where Graham Dillette won in 2009, when you didn't know who Graham Dillette was. So that's only 5 years ago. And I think we all know who Graham was, 2 years ago, kind of got thrust onto the stage of like, okay, this guy's probably the next great Canadian. And then last year, it's like, okay, no doubt, this guy is going to carry the flag for a long time in Canadian golf. So if you get a chance to get down there, do it. Don't... don't miss it. It's probably, you've got that and the senior event at the end of August in Canyon Meadows. Those would be the two best events to go to in golf, maybe in our province, all year, in my mind. Yep. And I'm just getting up to speed on this whole golf thing with the TF Tuesdays. Golfed yesterday. Did not get a hole in one. Otherwise, very solid. Nice weather. Hot.
Oh, she was hot again yesterday.
Man. I passed out in the car on the way home. I wasn't driving, which is always good when you're sleeping in the car, to not be driving or operating the vehicle while you're sleeping. News of the day. We're getting behind here. Let's do this. We mentioned it. The Major League Baseball non-waiver trade deadline, 2 o'clock today, Mountain. Yesterday's pre-deadline fireworks included Justin Masterson going from Cleveland to St. Louis for outfielder James Ramsey, a first-round pick of a few years ago. The Cubs get lefty Felix DeBrandt. Why are the Cubs going after Felix DeBrandt? Is this a...
They're turning the corner. It was.
Is this a general manager that knows a guy from his old stop? Because the Sox GM of past is now the Cubs, right?
Theo Epstein, the president, but Jed Hoyer as well in the organization. So both those guys familiar in Boston. But they both said they're turning the corner. This is the offseason. They're going to start spending some money. And instead of going for the prospects this year, they're starting to bring in some guys that can play now. So they're turning the corner. They've spent the last 5 years building up the prospect system and done a fantastic job of it. And now they're starting to see the fruits of that labor. So exciting times. But Felix DeBrandt, a good young arm to add to the Cubs for sure. But
he was absolute dog crap earlier. But I think they like what he can be when he's pitching well.
And also Emilio Bonifacio, who everyone's familiar with Toronto, is on
Emilio
the market.
Emilio Bonifacio.
Who's had a resurge his career with the Cubs this year, is on the market as well from Chicago to be moved.
Other guys expected to be moved. John Lester from Boston. He was scratched against the Jays yesterday because of the trade talks surrounding his name. Others on the block, Alex Rios, and anyone who plays for the Phillies. Jays won their fifth in a row last night. Mark Burley finally earned win number 11 on the year. I believe he started 10-0, and his last nine starts, zero wins. His last win before last night was June 1st. He went 6 1/3, allowing just a single run against. Nice to see him back in the win column. Deonner Navarro, 3-for-4 with 3 ribbies. Well, Jose Reyes, Melky Cabrera, and Anthony Gose each scored twice. They look for a sixth consecutive win tonight. Do the Jays in Houston, opening a four-game set. Drew Hutchison will start for the visitors. Houston just beat Oakland 8-1. Oakland's pretty good, but hey, just one game. Hutchison was great in his last start. He went 6 2/3, striking out 7, which is impressive. To do it in Yankee Stadium, all the more impressive.
Mm-hmm.
He was the guy that broke the streak of the 17 consecutive losses at Yankee Stadium for the Jays. So he's coming off a big start, but he's not coming off extra rest, and he seems to pitch better when he's got a little extra rest under his belt. We're a day away from PK Subban and the Montreal Canadiens arbitration hearing. The Habs asking for a $5.25 million settlement, while Subban's camp seeking $8.5 million. The Canadiens have the option to choose between a 1 or 2 year pact. They've chosen a one-year thing, which is a little confusing, but many believe this won't even get to the boardroom. The Habs and Subban seeking a long-term partnership. His agent's been doing some media. The Habs have talked about wanting PK around long-term. I don't know that a one-year deal and arbitration again next year is what they want. And how many cases have actually got to arbitration this year?
One. Vladimir Sobotka, who left the KHL.
So pretty much zero players that are in the NHL next year. So I think this gets done because, A, you don't want to throw muck at your star player, your franchise player, and B, everyone has avoided arbitration thus far.
Yeah, it wouldn't make sense for Montreal to go to arbitration. They're not going to win this one at all. There's really not what can they say to an arbitrator that would make, you know, PK Subban be worth less. Anything they would say would be detrimental to that relationship. It would be messy. It would be bad, so you don't want to do it.
And if they think he's worth $5.25 million, I wonder what the New Jersey Devils think PK Subban is worth. They just signed Andy Green to a 5-year, $25 million extension to stay in Jersey. The new deal kicks in beyond this season. It's next fall it'll kick in. He's 31 years old, coming off a career high of 32 points. Not huge, very steady, and some praise from the coaching staff on how he plays the game, always in the right position. But not an all-star, not a world beater, not Drew Doughty. And he's already 5 times 5. So if you think Montreal is winning an arbitration case at 5.25 for PK Subban,
No, like we said,
give your head a shake.
Yeah, we said it yesterday. It was just a negotiating tactic. They start off low, and then they can come off of that quite a ways, and they can go to PK Subban's camp and say, look at how far we're coming off. If you want to come down from your 8.5, meet somewhere in the middle. It's just one of those, we saw it in the lockout. It's one of those, it's what you do when you negotiate.
Also avoiding arbitration, Kings left winger Dwight King and the defending champs, $5.85 million bucks over 3 years, just a shade under $2 million a year, the 1.95. And more NHL conversation with Elliot Friedman at 8 o'clock as we interrupt Elliot's offseason like a bunch of jerks.
Elliot, do you think you had maybe on a Thursday, the Calgary, the 960, could you come on?
Well, the guy doesn't work hard enough during the regular season.
We'd like to talk about hockey. Could you talk about hockey?
He's nice enough to do that. And he can get angry sometimes. So I'm just happy he's joining us today. As long as he... If he comes on, maybe we'll get him to insult Boomer. Because last time he was on, we had mentioned that Boomer was sick, and I was hosting because Boomer was not feeling well, and frankly, had some pretty vicious and nasty things to say about Boomer's habits.
When you probably live as unhealthy as Dean does, I guess that happens.
Wow,
I think that's really dumb thinking, Dean. And I'm not saying you're dumb. I'll say you're dumb for other things, but not this.
My favorite part of that clip, Jay, is Dean when he...
You know, you're dumb. I'll say you're dumb for other things.
Well, you are, but I'm not saying you're dumb. Well, you are. One more time. That's awesome. You got that for me? One more time? Well, you are saying I'm dumb.
Yeah. You know, you're dumb. I'll say you're dumb for other things, but...
That's dumb thinking.
You know, you're dumb.
So, Elliot Friedman at 8 o'clock. We'll find out who he thinks is dumb. CFL Week 6
goes tonight.
All right. Maybe I am dumb. Hamilton hosts Winnipeg. 4-1 Winnipeg. Already more wins than they had last season. Coming off a very solid defensive effort over BC. They allowed just 6 points and a 23-6 win over the Lions. And they could temporarily take over top spot in the West, well, at least for a day, with a victory. Hamilton beat the Red Blacks last week for their first win of the season. That first one's the hardest, they say. In the Eastern Division?
But it's good enough to be first place. Hamilton, sitting in top spot, East Division regular season champions.
It's embarrassing. The Stamps, meanwhile, host the Lions tomorrow night at McMahon. It's an 8 o'clock start, and Calgary looking to a new tailback to carry the load between the tackles. It appears Martel Mallett will start in place of a pair of injured Canadian backs. Of course, John Cornish, Matt Walter, both out with head injuries. We'll hear from Canadian running back Andrew Harris later this morning. Josh caught up with him at Lions practice yesterday. He leads the league in rushing this season.
Pretty good.
Also of note, Bo Levi Mitchell looking to make history tomorrow night as the first quarterback in league history to win his first 8 games started. He and former Stamp Jeff Garcia hold the mark of 7-0. That's the CFL record. Of course, a win tomorrow night. Bo Levi be hooting and hollering. He'll be fired up. The early game on Friday has the Argos and Owls squaring off in Montreal. The good news, someone's going to win this thing.
You hope.
Wow. I mean, you're looking at first place in the East. Also, that Hamilton-Ottawa game. That is first place matchup written all over it.
Anybody can be first in the East with a victory this week. It's wide open.
And later this weekend, Saskatchewan and Ottawa play in our nation's capital. That game already sold out for the first Rider game. Watermelons, apparently very, very scarce in Ottawa right now.
Yeah, well, it's the Red Blacks, their expansion. We expect them to be sold out, especially with the Riders. Chris Getzlaff coming back in the lineup for the Riders this week, too.
That seems to be big news. And I correct myself. I had said Hamilton was playing Ottawa. We just mentioned Saskatchewan's playing Ottawa. It is Hamilton and Winnipeg. So it could be a first-place game between terrible Toronto and horrible Montreal on a Friday night as the first of the doubleheader before the Stamps get at it with the Leos. Tennis, Milos Raonic defeated American Jack Sock at the City Open in Washington. He's onto the third round. So is Sock's doubles partner as he paired up with Vasek Pospisil of Vancouver and Vernon to win the doubles title at Wimbledon. Pospisil also won his singles match. He's onto the third round as well. Rogers Cup begins next week in Toronto. Raonic and Eugenie Bouchard will be the stars of the show. The men in Toronto, the ladies in Montreal will chat. More tennis with Carolyn Cameron of Sportsnet Connected, the morning edition, at 8:20. Looking forward to that. On the big circuit, the PGA Tour, the World Golf Championships Bridgestone Invitational starts this morning. 7:10. Field gets going. It's highlighted by defending champion Tiger Woods. Defending champion Tiger Woods. We haven't said that much in the last half decade.
No.
At least at the majors. He's actually been all right away from the majors.
Five wins?
Yeah, five wins last year, yeah.
So, I mean, he did okay.
And you know what? All things considered, how he has come off that back surgery. I mean, he hasn't shot the lights out, but he has looked a little bit like old Tiger at times. No, he hasn't had the Sunday red. No, he has not won tournaments running away. But the surgery looks like it's going to get him back to a better place than where he was. I still think he's going to win some majors. I know a lot of people think he's done. I don't think that's the case. We'll see how this one goes. He won it last year, the Bridgestone. Rory McIlroy will also be there. And of course, everybody's favorite Saskatchewan product on the PGA Tour, Graham Dillette, coming off a pretty strong performance at the RBC Canadian Open, where he finished tied for seventh, including tying a club record, course record at Royal Montreal on his Friday of last weekend, carding a 63. And we mentioned it earlier, PGA Tour Canada, the ATB Financial Classic, gets started at Scirocco at the south end of our city, 7:15 the first tee time. And because it came on the morning show on Monday and seems like a real good guy, we are adopting Riley Fleming as our official player we're cheering for in the tournament from Airdrie.
We are you.
We.
We.
Otherwise, you're biking to work tomorrow.
You don't have a choice.
You're biking to work or you're cheering for Riley Fleming.
Get your Riley Fleming.
It's up to you. I don't know who else you want. Maybe you're more of a Ryan Yip guy. I don't know.
You know what? Just because we had him on the show, I'll cheer for him.
That's what I'm talking about. And way to come around there. So for more information,
you convinced me. I'm on the bandwagon now.
ATBFinancialClassic.com for all your information, including the leaderboard, tickets to the event, and much, much more. Tonight on the old Sportsnet 960 The Fan, we're done with this just-in-progress stuff. 6 o'clock start. Astros Jays will go live from the ballpark that has a hill in center field, a train, and a pretty mediocre baseball club, although the hits leader in the majors as well. Yeah. Houston Astros, interesting. They've been collecting young prospects for a long, long time, starting to be a little more respectable, but not quite there yet. They're still 20 games under 500, and yes, it is Drew Hutchison throwing for the visiting Bluebirds. Who's he up against? Some guy I'm not too familiar with. His name is Jared Cosart. A right-hander who is 9-7 on the season, but struggled in July. He's 1-2 with an ERA over 8. Yuck! So we'll have that at 6 o'clock. And a reminder, before the end of the program, we have a special guest at 7:30 with a huge announcement. The author of a Gary Bettman biography I would recommend you read, sooner the better, Jonathan Gatehouse at the top of the clock. And next, we go to Italy. That's right. We'll be on a phone line to Italy to talk with Calgary's Jeff Glass. He's playing in the KHL, and yeah, they're having a little training camp in Italy. So we'll ask how the pizza is and exactly what is and isn't normal in the KHL. That's next on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Talking sports in the morning, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
We had, let's see, how did the week go? We started with... How did the Artist of the Day go this week? Monday, Outkast. Monday, Cake. Monday Tuesday, Cake. Outkast. Wednesday, Chuck Berry. Godfather of rock and roll. What are we going to do today? Just when you may have faith in me, I'm probably going to piss everyone else off. So, here we go. We'll see what happens.
What
7 o'clock,
we'll get into that. That's a surprise?
Well, it's just, you know, you go from Chuck Berry, a legend, to... maybe more of a flavor of the monthly kind of sound. Old guys are going to just be pulling their hair out. Can't wait. 7 o'clock. We'll get to that. Also at 7 o'clock, Jonathan Gatehouse. He's the author of the book, The Instigator. This is the best sports book I've read in 2 years at least. So looking forward to chatting with him about Gary Bettman. It's a biography on the NHL's commissioner. And the more you learn about Bettman, the more he is an absolute junkyard dog. He is a bully. He does not back down. There are no problems Gary Bettman does not find solutions for. And we'll talk to the author of that book in about 20 minutes' time. But right now we go via the Subway Restaurant's Fresh Take Hotline all the way to Italy to say hello to Calgary's Jeff Glass. Morning, Jeff.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Fantastic. What the heck are you doing in Italy?
Well, the KHL likes to explore this time of year, so we're having our training camp in Aosta, Italy right now, and I can't complain. It's beautiful here.
So are you up near Austria in the mountainous part, or are you down by Rome in the waters of the Adriatic? Where are you?
No, we're right up in the mountains. It's beautiful here. It reminds me something of Banff or something like that back home. So they like the thin mountain air up here to train us in, and I can't complain.
So how long have you been doing this in terms of heading to Italy? Because to me, I'm looking at your resume here. This is your first year with a new KHL team. You've been in the league since 09-10, but have you been to Italy for a training camp before?
No, usually we go to Switzerland or Germany or somewhere like that, but this is my first time to Italy. It's been fantastic so far. We've actually been here about 3 days. We started the training camp right in Russia, in Togliatti. And then we move training camp here. We're going to play a couple exhibition games and then move on to Switzerland before heading back to Russia.
So where is Togliatti, the team that you're playing for in Russia?
Well, it's in the middle of nowhere. I'm sure Russians wouldn't think that way, but it's right in the heart of, it's about 1,000 kilometers east of Moscow.
Wow.
It's a working city. It's a blue-collar city. I haven't seen much of it. Like you said, it's an expansion club, so... this is their first year in the league, and I'm new to the city as well, but I'm learning.
Now, you were a part of Canada's World Junior Gold Medal winning team in 2005. You played your junior hockey in Kootenay, an Ottawa Senators draft pick, and you were in Binghamton for 4 years in the American Hockey League. When did you head over to the KHL, and what were your thoughts before you got there?
I headed over, just like you said, after 4 years at Binghamton. I was going to become a restricted free agent, and I wasn't qualified by Ottawa, so the offer came up to come over for a one-year deal to play in the KHL, and at the time I wanted to take it as one step at a time and play 1 year, and I heard the stories, and for sure I was pretty young to head over at that time. I think I was about 23, and it was a little bit maybe out of the ordinary, but I came over, I took it 1 year at a time, and 6 years later I'm still here, so it's hard to complain. It's been real good to me, and I really enjoy it.
You have become an elder statesman, a wise man for which to talk to, I'm sure, for many guys that are kicking the tires on going over to Russia. How many calls do you get every off season?
Yeah. Between me and my wife, we field questions all summer about food, the living conditions, the planes, so you name it. But that's part of the gig, and we actually enjoy, there's an import rule where you can only have 5 or 6 imports per team. And to get over a good group of people on your team is pretty important. So I always like helping guys out, especially if they're coming to my squad, and make my year easier and make their year easier.
All right, so take us back to 2009-10. You played for a bunch of different teams in the K. Maybe walk us through your resume, where you've played, and maybe how the cities or the teams compare and contrast against each other.
Sure. Yeah, so my first 3 years I spent in Kazakhstan, actually. I was playing for a team in Astana. It's not the capital of Kazakhstan, but it's the newest city they've built there, and it's they call it Small Dubai. It's a beautiful city that's been built in the last 10 years, and it comes up quick, so there's a few building errors and learning curves and whatnot you want to call it with the city. But because the team wasn't in Russia, there's actually no rule on how many imports you're allowed on the team. So we had 7 guys from outside of Russia on the team, which made the transition super easy for me. And we had a couple good years there, and I got to meet a couple guys that were really, really helpful in my development in the KHL. And from there, I moved on to a town, Novosibirsk, which is right where it sounds, right in the middle of Siberia. And I played one season there, and it was actually one of my best years in the KHL. It was cold. There wasn't much to do, but they love their hockey there. And, you know, it'd be similar to a Calgary or Edmonton where people absolutely love the hockey and do anything for the hockey, and the town kind of revolves around the team. So I really enjoyed my season there, and from there I signed in Moscow with the team Spartak Moscow. It was a 2-year deal, and I'm not sure many people are probably too familiar with this, but the team was had to be shut down partway through last season due to financial, our sponsor got shut down due to fraudulent banking and all sorts of fun stuff like that. So from there, the story gets to take a little bit of a turn, and I transferred from Spartak Moscow to CSKA Moscow Red Army, and I finished the season there, just down the street, and which led me to having to sign this year in Lada Togliatti, and that's the short version of a really, really long story.
Hey, that's a lot of stickers on the suitcase. That's pretty cool. What would be, if someone said, I've never been to Russia, what's Russia like as a country? How do you answer that question?
Well, it's different. It's different. And I don't ever mean to offend Russians or the people or the towns, but it's totally different than what we're used to in Canada, especially. And the way they think is different. The food's different. And just the way they do things is just different. And the first couple of years, I'm very lucky I was kind of eased into it because it can really be a culture shock is the best way to put it. But once you get the hang of it and you start to understand a little bit why they think the way they think, they're hardworking people that that mean well and they're obviously dedicated to the sport. But I would never recommend people to come to Russia and just tour around like you would in Barcelona or something like that. You probably won't enjoy yourself. But after getting to know the culture a little bit, it's not so bad.
Now, you said your wife. Has she been with you since day one on the journey to Kazakhstan, or was that later on that she started coming over with you in season?
No, year one, she came back and forth. We did a little bit of long distance that year. Like I said, it was the first year, and it was going to be tough to really commit to the whole KHL in year one. And then, but year two to now, she's been with me the whole time, and life's been good. And I always said as soon as she says she's had enough of this, then that'll be it. But she's a trooper, and we've enjoyed it over here. So we'll keep going until they kick us out.
And as a player, this is not a bad league to be playing in. They don't throw 80 games at you. There isn't a playoff that takes you into June. Yes, you might get started a little earlier, but this is a very player-friendly schedule, is it not?
Yeah, absolutely. It's we don't even play back-to-back games. The schedule's been set up, so you play every other day. Most road trips are no longer than 4 or 5 games. I mean, there's breaks in the middle of the season for Euro tours and all sorts of things that, like you said, make it super friendly on the player and the longevity of a player. And you know, playing 56 games this year, there'll be 60. It's hard to complain about something like that. You're still going to see all the teams, all the towns. There's still tons of rivalry games, but you're sticking away from playing those 3-and-3s that used to kill me in the American League and stuff like that. That, you know, it's as a player, when you're grinding it out, it just doesn't feel like there's the dog days of hockey over here quite as bad as I found in the American League.
It's a great point, because and then never mind the money. I mean, a guy making good money in the American League probably isn't even making $150,000, and you're right, you can play 3 games in 48 hours in that league. Meanwhile, in Russia, you mentioned the schedule, you never play back-to-back, you're not playing anywhere near 60 games, I don't think, and the money probably is 5 to 10-fold better than the American Hockey League for a similar caliber, is it not?
Yeah, absolutely, and the thing that can be mistaken for a lot of guys, I try to warn them coming over, is the money isn't there right away. And it's always tenure in this league. And you put your time in and you get rewarded as it goes. But the import guys, they don't like to reward them right off the bat unless you have obviously an extensive NHL resume. They want to see you come over and put your time and effort in and commit to the league. And then you're right, the money is there. But it's one of those leagues where you really got to commit to it, and you really got to go with the right frame of mind. And my buddies always give me a hard time about my frame of mind, but you got to be positive. You got to go in there thinking that fully committed to it, and you can really reap the benefits of it.
So, at what point were you considered a guy that had paid enough dues, that had tenure in the league? Was it after 3 years in Kazakhstan? Was it after a solid playoff performance your first year after leaving Kazakhstan? At what point did you start seeing, okay, teams are starting to back up the Brinks truck a bit here?
Yeah, it was probably after my year in Novosibirsk. It was, like you said, I had a good run in the playoffs, and actually I got to play Kari Ramo, who you guys are obviously too familiar with, and we had a good battle there in the playoffs and stuff like that, where you start to gain respect around the league. And that's probably when it started to all kind of come to fruition for me, and I really started to understand what the whole league was about. But with that being said, too, that had to move from a pretty comfortable setup in Astana to more of a volatile setup in Russia, where you're more treated like the business that it is, more so than, let's say, those teams that are outside of Russia.
Have you ever had money issues in terms of not getting paid? Has there been a tough time collecting? Have you had to get your agent to get lawyers to fight for money? You hear some of these horror stories, and it's not necessarily always the case, but some of the leagues in Europe, they'll cut you and pretend they don't know who you are.
Yep, and like I said, I don't want to get thrown under the bus too much here, but that was my whole season last year. Was we had a sponsor, and the sponsor was shut down mid-season, so literally... we went from a Thursday afternoon, we were informed that all of our bank accounts would be shut down, and the team literally ran dry. So from moving on from that point forward, we had no pregame meals at the rink. Our pregame skates, we couldn't afford the ice time. We had to borrow money to take planes. We had to, you name it, our season, it was a mess. And those stories are true. There's not one team in the KHL that's profitable, and all these owners are giving away money every year. And so there's no way to recoup these losses once a team does start to go under, and once they do fold and the sponsors lost, the teams run dry. And I experienced that firsthand last year. So to answer all your questions, yes, yeah, for sure that does happen. And I've experienced it firsthand, and that's the downside of the league. And now you spend time trying to recoup what you lost and hope that you can get somewhere close to the number you agreed on at the beginning of the season and move forward.
You've played all over the league, as we mentioned, a year in Kazakhstan, a couple last year split between two squads in Moscow. You're at an expansion team this year. You're up, I imagine, close to Siberia that one year after Kazakhstan. What was the worst travel in terms of each of those franchises, and what would be a trip that you'd never want to go through again? Because we had Jordan Henry on the other day. We talked to some guys from Croatia earlier in the week. We'll have Tyler Moss tomorrow, who's played your position in that league for a long time. Everyone's got a couple travel horror stories, it seems.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it, and I mean, I think we're covering 9 time zones, and flying from one side to the other is not fun, and you make it work. The horror stories can go on and on, but the funny ones I always laugh about is just moving around Moscow. Moscow's such a big city, and it's just congested, and you know, I think I've told stories before where it can take 4 hours to drive 15 minutes just because traffic's so bad and it's just come to a halt. And those stories in Moscow are honestly my favorite because I remember last year it took me 4 hours to get, like I said, 15 minutes home from the rink, and you can't even walk it because it's too far to walk and you don't move in the car and it just doesn't seem like you're getting anywhere. So traveling across the country is one story, but even traveling in the big cities is a whole other bag of worms.
And we talked about it a little bit yesterday. Moscow is one of the biggest cities on Earth. In fact, it's the biggest city in the world that isn't located on the ocean. You've got nasty winters. You've got over 100 billionaires living in the city. It's the second most expensive city to live in the world. Just the nuances of Moscow. How much did they raise your eyebrows coming over from North America to see this mega city in the middle of Russia?
It's unbelievable. I mean, it's only can be compared to a New York City or a Chicago. That's the only thing I've seen that's come close. It's like you said, the billionaires that hang out in the same sort of spots. It's so in your face every day. And I thoroughly enjoyed Moscow. It's one of my favorite cities in the world, and I really, really enjoyed just people watching and just wandering around. And they have everything we're used to, the Starbucks, you name it over there. So that kind of stuff I really enjoyed. And Moscow as a city is pretty cool. I had my family come over at Christmas time last year to kind of experience it a little bit, and I think they're pretty blown away with, just like you said, how expensive things are and how much a show and go there is in that city.
Now, I heard something about Moscow. I would like you to debunk the myth or confirm what I've heard, that in a lot of places in Moscow, you don't hail a cab, you just get in a car with someone and start negotiating. Is that true, or is that totally bogus?
100% true, yeah. No, and that happens all across Russia. We call them gypsy cabs. I don't know what the official term for them would be, but you flag them down. You hope you try not to sound too English because you know the rate's going to go up as soon as you do, and you try to put on your best Russian face and negotiate a rate, jump in with a guy, and hope for the best. And I've been doing it for 6 years, and at the beginning I was definitely a little bit nervous about it, but I'm starting to get the hang of it. And again, there's the horror stories that go with it, but for now, knock on wood, I've been lucky enough that my gypsy cabs have been friends to me, and I haven't had to have to get any tilts with any of these guys.
Jeff, fantastic catching up with you today. I know a lot of Calgarians excited to hear your story and the success you've had over there. I would say goodbye in Russian, but I have no idea how. If you have any Russian to say to anyone listening right now, this would be the time.
You know, I don't even want to practice my Russian. It's morning there, so dobro utro to everybody in Calgary.
All right, that sounds fantastic. Enjoy Italy. Have a great season with Togliatti, and I look forward to catching up with you when you're back in the spring.
Sounds good, guys. Thanks.
All right, that is Jeff Glass, the former Kootenai Ice netminder, a gold medal-winning netminder for Team Canada at the World Juniors in 2005, 4 years in the American Hockey League, and he is now entering his sixth season in the KHL. Interesting stuff. We'll come back with the author of a biography on Gary Bettman. We all think we know Gary Bettman, yet how come there isn't more books on Gary Bettman? This is one of the most powerful men in hockey, if not the most powerful man, and yet remains a bit of an unknown in terms of who is he away from work. We'll find out next with Jonathan Gatehouse on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.